dance, and stories. Details at cufolkandroots.org.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. In this data-driven age, all that we are is collectible, quantifiable, and shareable. Enter personal genome testing. For $99, a company called 23andMe will analyze your genetic material and trace your ancestry. Before the FDA banned it from doing so last December, it also offered to give you a detailed breakdown of your health, including your likelihood of contracting certain diseases. Now, I don't know much about my history beyond two generations, but I carry some of that history in my genes, history that goes way back to when Homo sapiens mixed with the Neanderthals. I wanted to know more about that and any latent health issues. So last October, before the FDA ban, OTM producer PJ Vogt and I got the test kits and sat down to talk about it. You'll also hear executive producer Katya Rogers and former OTM producer Jamie York. Okay, so let's tear them open.
All right.
PJ.
Yeah.
Why do you want to do this?
Well, it's basically just for very small and petty reasons, and I feel like maybe I'm uncorking something that I haven't thought hard enough about. You know that I drink a lot of Diet Coke every day?
Oh, yeah.
And I read this thing where Peter Orszag, who used to be Obama's budget guy, he also does. And he took this test and found out that he has a – this is really medical looking. He has a genetic thing that lets him metabolize caffeine faster. So this thing that he's doing that looks really gross to everybody else actually makes sense because of his chemistry or whatever. The other thing is I'm in a fight with my mom about a food allergy that she believes that I have that I don't believe that I have. And it would be nice to have proof.
So that's why you wanted to do this?
That's what got me started on it.
For me, it's pretty different.
What's yours?
Well, initially, I just wanted to know how much Neanderthal DNA I had. But I also think that I'll find all sorts of information useful. I mean, the big difference, well, there are lots of differences between us, PJ, but one of them is 30 years. And for you, the likelihood of, say, developing Alzheimer's is more academic than I think it is for me.
Does that make you kind of not want to do it, though? I mean, if you can't do anything to prevent these things, then...
Well, if you're on the alert for it, then you don't have to go through the agonizing process of dragging everyone else through it for a prolonged period of time when you don't actually have any real quality of life.
But you do have to go through the agony of, like... I don't know, knowing that...
You know, I started wearing black on my 13th birthday, PJ. In fact, it will, I hope, give me a greater appreciation for the good health that I currently have.
Okay, so you guys are sitting there talking about what you want from the test, what you think you might get from the test. What about your families? Don't they have any say in it?
No.
Nothing.
Absolutely not. I mean, there are great other things that you can find out. You can find out your sensitivity to certain kinds of medicine, all this stuff about your family history. I mean, the information is for me. I don't have to share any of this with anybody if I don't want to.
I wouldn't do it.
Why not?
Because if I did it and I found out something that was going to be coming down the line at me, like Parkinson's or something, when would I tell my kids? Oh, my partner. That's going to be his life, too.
I have to say, I don't get it. I always want to know.
One of my friends that I grew up with had cystic fibrosis, so knew that there was a clock ticking, and it was really defining. Like, it was the thing, you know, the first thing you'd say about a person would be that. Like, knowing probably how you're going to die and when you're going to die, I don't think it does make you live more or appreciate things more. I think I have this fantasy that I would find out that I knew how much time I had. And in doing that, I would spend it better than knowing abstractly that I'm going to die. And I don't think that's true. I think death kind of crowds everything else out. Like, I think if you told your family, guys, this is going to happen in 20 years, but don't worry about it, I think they'd worry about it. Like, I think it's all that they would think about.
Sitting next to you right now is Jamie York. I'm just wondering... Your father was adopted, right?
My father was adopted twice. My mother's father was adopted.
So that leaves you with no knowledge of like three quarters of your genetic code. Would you be interested in doing something like this?
No, I find the prospect of it absolutely terrifying.
Why?
I don't want to know if there are things that I have a likelihood of developing towards the end of my life, like Alzheimer's. I really don't want to know if I have a likelihood of developing something. My probably greatest fear is something like Huntington's that comes on in your late 40s and is irreversible and untreatable. I don't want any part of that.
I think that fundamentally what motivates me more than anything is curiosity.
You've got such a firm foundation of existential dread that there's nothing that could really disrupt it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. It's kind of a cliche, but I think it probably just heightens our kind of emotional predispositions anyway.
Like anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel compelled. Once you know you can find out, you have to find out.
Should we spit?
Okay. I'm doing it now. This is radio gold. People are really going to like the sound of us spitting into plastic tubes. Is yours turning red?
Mm-mm.
Huh. Probably doesn't mean anything. Am I bleeding?
That's taken forever.
Yeah, it says nothing about red.
It's probably blood. You'll probably be fine.
It's probably blood. You'll probably be fine.
Okay.
All right. I keep my sample. You keep your sample. Oh, so Brooke, we're not... Mm-hmm. First of all, we didn't do this in the state of New York because we're not legally allowed to.
Why not?
Because New York has strict regulations about who's allowed to test and collect DNA. So we did this in another state where that's legal. And tomorrow I'm going to drive from that state that we're in to New Jersey to mail this off.
Okay.
Because we can't mail it from New York. They'll destroy it if they get it from New York. And then we're going to wait a month. And then we're going to find out our futures.
We won't. We'll just find out a set of probabilities.
I want to know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Okay, so now we're going to cut away from you and PJ spitting into tubes. We'll get to those results in a few minutes, but first we have some business with you, dear listener.
Yes, we are in the middle of a pledge drive, and we are here to, hopefully, get you to pitch in and do your part to help support everything you listen to on this station. Here's how you can help.
You can call 217-244-9455 or give online at willpledge.org to pledge your support to On the Media. I am so glad they're going to tell us what's going to happen, because it would be so unfair to end that segment that way and then move on to something else. My name is Lisa Brault. I'm the director of marketing here at Illinois Public Media and WILL. And I'm joined in the studio with our membership director, John Steinbacher, and with the dean of the College of Media, Dean Jan Slater. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It is wonderful to have you here. We're off to a good start with our pledge drive. This is the first Monday of our pledge drive, our fall radio drive, and we are looking for folks to give in support of quality public radio here in Central Illinois. Right now you're listening to On the Media. It's a program I think that the three of us in here feel especially close to. I'm a current events junkie. I'm pretty sure John enjoys this show too, and I know, Dean Slater, you are particularly fond of this program.
It is a great program. I've known, actually, Bob Garfield for a long time. He used to be a primary columnist for Advertising Age, and I came from the advertising business. So I've read him and have met him on several occasions. The thing I love about On the Media is, just as the story we just heard, they're talking about things that are really relevant and in a personal way. And so I think that that's what makes it so important to listen to, because you're learning things that you wouldn't get any other way. And I feel the same way about public radio.
Absolutely. One of the things I'm very fond of with On the Media is that, like you said, it's very relatable and very human. It's important. It's big news. It's hard news, but it's got a sense of humor about it. It can be a little snarky at times, I feel, which is good, though, because I think that's the world that we live in, and I think we do have to have a bit of a sense of humor. We're talking about really big issues. I think it kind of helps soften some of that a little bit, and they're good at that.
Well, they're very good at that, and I think just as Brooke was taking this test and doing all this, again, they're getting experience while they're doing it, and they can kind of tell you about what they felt and why they thought, and they're getting a lot of different opinions. And I think that that's what's really important for for people to be able to make those kinds of judgments with a lot of information.
Definitely. And this is a program that helps you, the listener, and all of us here become better informed, makes you a smarter citizen. It helps keep that information flowing. And those are things that if those are important to you, we would love to hear from you right now. 217-244-9455 is that number to call. You can also give online at willpledge.org if you would rather not talk to a human. You can go online and use technology to your advantage. We have a few people we'd like to thank. We'd like to thank David and Laura from Bement, Jim and Janet from Kankakee, and Alan from West Salem. And you know, Dean Slater, it is really great to hear from these people who are not necessarily in the Champaign-Urbana area. I think it sort of speaks to how WILL has a reach far outside this area.
I think that's absolutely true. And you know, there's never been more consumption of news and information. And the fact that WILL reaches so far of all of Central Illinois to give people the kind of information they want is really important to us.
Yep. And so we are here for you. And we'll be here for you all throughout this program. We're going to step out here in just a few seconds and take you back to the program. But before we do that, I just want to give the number one more time. Please give us a call and pledge your support to public media in Central Illinois at 217-244-9455, or you can give online at willpledge.org. Thank you.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Now back to the DNA story. Fast forward a couple of months, PJ and I got our results from 23andMe and sent the data to a geneticist for more analysis and context through a company called Prometheus. We'll bring him in later. So we've got it. Well, go ahead and open your Coke.
Well,
speaking of which, did you find out whether or not you are a fast caffeine metabolizer?
That was maybe the only good piece of news in my entire report, is that I am a fast caffeine metabolizer, so I can drink a bunch of caffeine, and it's okay, and it actually is better for my heart instead of worse for my heart.
Huh.
Yeah.
Excellent. So what was the bad news?
Just everything else.
Really?
I have a high risk of gout. Gout wasn't in my original report, but I got an email a week after I got my results being like, hey, you've got an update. And I clicked through and it was like 35% chance that you'll develop gout when you get older.
Now that's a fantastic finding, because you can moderate your diet. You can respond to that.
I had a high probability of macular degeneration, and if I ate leafy greens and fish starting now, I might have a chance of lessening the likelihood of
mm-hmm.
that. But I don't want any, like, I thought either it would say that I was really healthy, or it would say, I think maybe young people have a tendency to imagine dying very dramatically. So I thought it was going to be like, you've got PJ Vogt disease and you've got 6 months to live. I didn't think it was going to say, you need to take care of yourself. Otherwise, as you get older, you are likely to get the diseases that all people get as they age.
Bummer, man. When you saw that your results, and yours were quite delayed, I should say, actually came in, were you scared?
I was immensely scared. I mean, it gave me 20 things to Google that I'd never heard of that all sounded ominous. I mean, I didn't know what a venous thromboembolism was.
That's the thing that I have.
Me too.
Increase of. Oh, hey, I bet you it's an Ashkenazi thing.
Yeah, I found out I'm 30% Ashkenazi, which
I didn't
know.
Only 30%? I am 97% Ashkenazi. When it looks for your history across the globe, it seemed like I spontaneously sprang up in the middle of the Ukraine somewhere. It's a little disappointing. Even more disappointing was being only 2.7% Neanderthal.
I'm sorry about that. I know that was important to you.
What were you?
I think I was a little bit more.
You're not worthy.
I was like 3.5%, I think.
See, you got a little above average. You know, your man crush, James Fallows, is 5%.
Seriously?
And that is way above average.
He's 5% Neanderthal and he can fly a plane. That's crazy.
So the things that I kind of expected, like tendency to obesity, diabetes 2, this venous thromboembolism thing was kind of a new idea, decreased heart issues. It all felt very run-of-the-mill. And then there's stuff that doesn't seem to make sense at all. And then it starts to feel like a horoscope, because you look at
totally.
That and you go, wow, a tendency to dyslexia? That's really not me. Although I do definitely sneeze in sunlight. Which
Wait, that's
is,
genetic?
Yes, it is.
One of the main reasons I initially wanted to do this was that I've been in a prolonged fight with my family. They all have gluten allergies, and they think that I do and that I'm in denial. And so I wanted conclusive proof that I don't. And my test said that I do.
Ultimately, were you glad you did this?
Oh, God, yeah. For me, it was really interesting to see where I'm from. My family has a bit of a weird genealogy, and we're pretty far flung, and there's been a lot of conjecture about it. They give you a map, and they say not only you had family in Spain, and you had family that were Jewish, and you had family in Germany, but also they say, like, there's a person in Iowa who is 5% related to you. And I brought up a person who the social networking component said was my relative, and my mom said, oh, yeah. It was her mother's estranged sister. So it was a branch of my mom's family that she'd completely lost touch with but heard about. So she's now doing the test and she wants to message this woman.
Wow. I found a lot of people who were second to third cousins.
You found a lot of them?
Yeah.
A lot of people actually asked me to share my genetic information with them. And it's one of the first times where I've actually felt uncomfortable about oversharing on a social network. Mm-hmm. That felt like a silly thing
to do.
Yeah,
that is unusual for you.
Yeah.
So we're going to bring in now Greg Lennon, who is a geneticist who has looked at our material through the Prometheus site. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brooke.
You work at SNPedia. What's that?
Well, it's actually pronounced Snipedia, which is, you know, a riff on Wikipedia, because like Wikipedia, it's a wiki that collects information about DNA and its consequences, and then it works with the tool Prometheus to create a report.
What do you think were the most unusual findings for PJ and for me?
Well, why don't you tell me first what you noticed?
Well, I noticed an increased risk for breast cancer. Personally, it seems that the average risk is 13.5, but my risk is 18.3%. I don't even know if that's statistically significant, and I don't know what I should do with that information. Can you explain to me how they came to that?
Sure. In the population, which in this case probably means mostly Caucasian females, your risk is estimated to be that number. Now, the real question, though, is that important? Is that meaningful? And is it something you would either worry about or discuss with your physician? And the answer in that case is probably, well, there's no harm in discussing it with your physician.
I knew you were going to say that.
Right?
You took this test yourself.
Yep.
You said if you were going to be making sausage, you ought to know what it tastes like. You know, was there a finding that you went, holy cow, or did you say, this is interesting, perhaps I should consult my physician about some moderate changes in lifestyle?
Yeah, we did do this first years ago because we wanted to drink our own Kool-Aid and just see what happened. And when I first took part of my report to my doctor, they have absolutely no idea what I was talking about. Hmm. This is all too new for them. Now, it's getting better. And in areas like breast cancer, it actually is better. In my case, breast cancer actually was something of very personal importance, not to me, but to someone who was very close to me, and was brought up with the physician and did change the course of therapy.
Did she have the BRCA markers?
No. The truth is, most women with breast cancer do not have BRCA1 markers, and certainly not the common ones.
I feel like I've been given a lot of information, and I'm not sure how to responsibly use it. I don't know what level of attention to pay now when I read an article that says, scientists may have found a DNA marker for whatever, if I should immediately rush back to my genome and try to see if I've got it, or if I should hold off because it's just going to scare and confuse me, and I'm basically going to misunderstand what I've been given.
Okay, that's a really easy one to answer.
Okay.
You hear something in the news, totally ignore it.
That was my policy already. That's great. So not on 23andMe, but in your results, it said that I had something called a warrior gene, and I was curious about that.
Well,
oh.
You know, it's one of those interesting things. Great to bring up at a cocktail party. Doesn't mean you ought to join the special forces. It does mean that people with the warrior gene have a slightly higher statistical likelihood of, in stressful situations, fighting rather than fleeing, or as tested by the equivalent psychological test, you know, done on college students who need to make a little money in a lab after school sometime.
Wait, so how do they stress out the college kids?
You can't think of ways to stress out college kids?
Was there anything about either of our results that struck you as somewhat unusual?
Well, probably the most important thing that leapt out in your report was that using Plavix, one of the most commonly prescribed drugs right now to treat or prevent stroke and heart attacks, isn't going to do you much good. If you're ever there and your cardiologist or other physician is saying, hey, here's the drug for you, well, you could just say, it doesn't look like it. Why don't we try a different drug that's more likely to be effective? In PJ's report, he's predicted to be lactose intolerant. He may not have had the slightest idea that now or later in his life, that ice cream may just give him an upset stomach. Maybe he already knows it now.
It's funny, actually, I do know it because I'm terribly lactose intolerant, but for most of my childhood, I didn't know, and I got sick all the time. I mean, if this had been around, I could have spent a lot less time vomiting milk, which would have been great.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, in this field, more and more people are moving towards, oh, hey, why don't we do these sort of analyses right at birth? A lot of this science will merge into your, hopefully, electronic medical record.
It also said I was more likely than most people to become addicted to heroin.
Yeah, I think it's truthfully a little bit too early to make too much of that. Again, those are some of these reports that you may just want to not believe it the first or second time it's reported, but, you know, wait and let the studies build up.
Those studies aren't particularly good any more than the study that suggests that I'm higher than average in empathy or something. That's a bunch of hooey, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
DNA is not destiny. You can have identical twins who, as far as we know, share almost totally identical DNA, and they can have different medical histories.
What about privacy issues? Any concern there?
Wouldn't say there are a lot of issues right now, honestly, in part because we just know so little. Now, maybe when we know a lot more, having your DNA out there in the world will be problematic. But the truth is, we won't be able to control that anyway. Your DNA is out there, whether it's on the surfaces of things you touch or elsewhere, and sooner or later, somebody could get access to it. Now, fortunately, we also have things like the so-called GINA, Genetic Non-Disclosure Act, that does protect us a bit legally, at least here in the U.S., from having DNA information used against you.
I just remembered there's one question I'm going to be really mad at myself if I don't ask. In the category of like things that are reliable versus things that are hooey, it said that I will not have male pattern baldness. Can you tell me that that's not hooey?
Not hooey.
Really?
You've got a really reduced risk of male pattern baldness.
Oh, that's great.
You can count on that one.
Okay, cool.
See, simple things make simple people happy. Is there anything in particular PJ should worry about?
Yeah, I think he ought to watch out for you.
Bye, Greg.
Good talking to you, PJ and Brooke.
Oh, thank you.
Greg Lennon is a geneticist with Snipedia, which is kind of like Wikipedia for DNA information.
In the pieces we just aired, you heard Brooke and the OTM producers struggling through the questions of mortality and fate, the promise and the limits of data collection. If this is the kind of thoughtful, well-crafted content that you've come to expect from public radio, now is the time to show your support. Here's how.
And the number to call is 244-9455. You can also give online at willpledge.org. And I have to say, that was really a pretty edifying last half hour of radio right there. Learned a lot. Hope you did too. My name is Lisa Brawls. I'm the Director of Marketing here at Illinois Public Media and WILL Radio. I'm here with John Steinbacher. He's our Director of Membership. And I'm also here with the Dean of the College of Media, Jan Slater. And Jan is a fan of On the Media, and she knows the folks who produce the show and has had some contact with them. And this show is really committed to bringing people the truth in a really thoughtful way and thought-provoking way, as Bob said. And it's a program that we think is really important here at the station. So if it's something that you support, we'd like you to give us a call right now at 217-244-9455. You can also give online, again, as we said, at willpledge.org. And if you donate today, You will be entered in a drawing for a gift basket from Common Ground Food Co-op that's valued at $75. And you don't have to pledge to enter, but we would really prefer that you do. Common Ground is a great community partner with us. And, you know, we've had folks from Common Ground here during Pledge from time to time. So that's why it's really great to have Dean Slater here to talk about the relationship to the community that the College of Media has, not just as the College of Media, but also through WILL.
Well, WILL is certainly a big part of the college, and it has been since its existence. And it's also a very important part of the university. You know, I believe that there's a lot of people who know about WILL, and that's the only thing they know about the University of Illinois or the College of Media, either one. I think that the fact that WIL serves the community of the university as well as the community of Champaign-Urbana, and as we've heard, serving people from all over the area to provide this really great news source. It's not just great programming, what we get from NPR or on the media or Fresh Air, but we get a lot of really great news stories. And I think what makes it so important is that it's a local station. They're giving local coverage. They're trying, really looking hard at what is relevant to the local area, and they make it all relevant. And that's why I think the audience reacts. And so, you know, we're totally audience supported. While we get a little bit of money from the feds, and we get a little money from the state, and the state system gives the university a little bit of money, which we provide to the WILL. The majority of the funds really come from the listeners who really support what you're doing and why we're doing it. And I think that that's what makes what WIL stands for so rewarding.
And if this is something that you agree with the dean on, give us a call, 217-244-9455. Give online at willpledge.org. We would like to thank Marilee or Marilea. We didn't know which, so we're going to say both. From Normal, thank you so much for your gift today. And Dean, just briefly, could you talk a little bit about the relationship that WILL's newsroom is? We sort of stepped up our relationship. We've had several interns come in the last year. What's your philosophy on using WILL as a sort of a live working newsroom for them? I know what we get from them, but could you talk a little bit more about like that, the importance of that?
It's incredibly important. We're teaching students, young people, 18 to 22-year-olds, that this is the life for them, and how to cover the news and how to write about the news and how to tell a good story that's relevant. There's no better place to do that than at a place like WILL that is doing it every day, 24 hours a day. And so it's really important that they learn from the professionals. And we have just a great resource. We have our own built-in lab.
And thank you for your support. 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. It will surprise you not at all to know that the seat of our national government, putting aside all the Greek columns and heroic statuary, is just a garish circus of vanity, lying, self-dealing, and professional incest. That the media and the political class have formed an unholy alliance is also not news. Enter, though, Mark Leibovich, chief national correspondent for the New York Times Magazine, who had the temerity and the access to document the sordidness in all its delicious detail. His best-selling book, This Town, Two Parties and a Funeral, Plus Plenty of Valet Parking in America's Gilded Capital, is like a cell phone camera sneaked into an orgy, as in, OMG, is that Andrea Mitchell? Ooh! Mark, welcome back to On the Media.
That's the single best introduction I have had since this book has come out. And I don't mean that just in the suck-up city context.
One of the tentpoles of your book is the White House Correspondents' Dinner. That used to be a standalone affair where politicians and the people who cover them rubbed shoulders for one evening, leaving the press feeling slightly awkward but also slightly self-important. But the event you describe in this book has just metastasized into this preening excess.
A single banquet is no longer sufficient, Bob, to celebrate the full achievements of the political media. It now must take place over a 5-day period in which we have 2 dozen or so pre-parties, after parties, tens of millions of dollars spent on entertainment and food and all that fun stuff, and all kinds of press coverage spent on the press. I mean, it's journalists congratulating journalists about their journalism, right? So I think this is a classic metaphor for the media and also Washington in general's inability to control itself and knowing something is grotesque and horrific and a joke and yet just amping it up. And I mean, I think it's the perfect example of the bubble world this has become and frankly the decadence that has prevailed here.
The book is very gossipy. Lobbyist Ken Duberstein gets especially rough treatment. Lobbyist and ex-Senator Evan Bayh is one of many portrayed as a hypocrite, liar, and public servant of easy virtue. Terry McAuliffe, now running for governor of Virginia, just gets eviscerated. Your old Washington Post colleague Howie Kurtz, now of Fox News, comes off as just a total blowhard. NBC's Andrea Mitchell, whom you don't actually say anything nasty about, but who appears again and again in the book with her husband, Alan Greenspan, former Fed chairman, is portrayed as a socialite who the reader can only conclude cannot possibly conduct journalism at arm's length.
She is emblematic of a figure in Washington whose social life, whose professional life, whose personal life overlaps so seamlessly that you wonder where the boundaries are, where the barriers are. Now, I also must say, Bob, that because I work for the New York Times and because I'm a respectable journalist, I shy away from the term gossip. Everything, you know, whether about Evan Bayh or Terry McAuliffe, or I mean, this is all up to the standards of the New York Times. It's all.
Well, let's just go with character assassination.
Yeah, sure, yeah. That's fine.
There are two media figures in the book who play outsized roles in the ecosystem. One of them is a sort of internet age Walter Winchell, Politico blogger Mike Allen. Tell me about Mike.
Well, he works at Politico, which is this website that I do think has revolutionized the political and media conversation in this town. Mike writes Playbook, which is this morning email tip sheet that goes out to about 100,000 influencers, people in politics, people on the staff, people in media, bookers, and so forth. And basically Mikey's newsletter, and he is known as Mikey in this sort of somewhat infantilized, boyish, perpetual high school way of ours, that he has this outsized role in setting the daily agenda, in figuring out what the talk shows will talk about, what might be on tomorrow's front pages or on the evening news, and in a sense has a very internet age role that is maybe analogous to what the front page of the New York Times might have had about 20 years ago.
Another key figure in your book is somebody who I'm sure 99.9% of America has never heard of. Who is Tammy Haddad?
Tammy is a longtime producer for Larry King Live. She went on to work for Chris Matthews. And then she kind of reinvented herself to be this full-service convener of the new media Washington. Washington has always had, you know, party hostess, party convener types, people who get the A-list together. What's distinct about Tammy is that she has become a very, very successful businesswoman, and she has contracted her services out to a number of media organizations who pay her a good amount of money to do whatever it is she does, whether it's some video component, whether it's hosting events, whether it's putting people together. And one of the things she's been able to do for people is get them access to the White House. So I did profile Tammy both as a singular and sort of original character in the modern Washington, but also someone who very, very deftly has insinuated herself into an administration that said that they would absolutely reject all traditional forms of influence peddling, of access peddling, and that, in a sense, has been part of her value proposition.
Now, the town you describe has reporters and pals constantly at the same parties exchanging not only air kisses, but also favors and considerations, and generally conducting themselves not as adversaries, but as members of the same club. And yet, Mark, and I know this is a question you prepared yourself to answer probably before you wrote the first word, you could not have written this book yourself if you were not one of them. You attend the parties, you extend some courtesies, you get book deals. So are you part of the solution or are you part of the problem?
I am absolutely an insider. I work for a major news organization. I would say that I am not invited to these parties because I am Mark Leibovich's charming, good-looking figure. I am invited because I work for the New York Times, and many people obviously think it's in their self-interest to be dealing with me or to have me in their rooms for whatever reason. I do have to be transparent about this, though. I mean, this is where I live. This is the life I've chosen to lead. I'm a political reporter. And yeah, maybe it did color my view a little bit, but I think it also gave me a kind of institutional knowledge that served me well. Ultimately, this book has been uncomfortable for me in many ways. I mean, it's made a lot of people uncomfortable. I think a lot of people are probably trashing me behind my back. One criticism has been that I violated an unwritten rule in which insiders should not speak critically of other insiders. I will plead totally guilty to that.
This Town is a bestseller, which is a good thing because it does expose the vanity and the posturing and the lying and the self-dealing and the professional incest earlier referred to. Is there any chance in the world that anything you have written will have a material change at all on business as usual in our nation's capital?
This is a book that does not have the chapter at the end in which I lay out the 10 clean bullet points in which how we can make the capital work better and, you know, how I come out for campaign finance reform or a third-party candidate or overhauling all the media or something. One of the things that, frankly, has disappointed me about this book is that I actually thought it would start a more animated conversation, even an argument inside of town, that there would actually be an occasion and someone would actually have their back up and someone would defend this way of life. And no one has. I mean, there's been this level of, yeah, he's right. Wow, don't we feel dirty? And, like, when's the next party? I mean, to be honest with you, if this book gets me invited to fewer, you know, brunches or book parties, I think that's a positive, unintended consequence.
Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Mark Leibovich is the chief national correspondent for the New York Times Magazine. His new book is titled This Town, Two Parties and a Funeral, Plus Plenty of Valet Parking in America's Gilded Capital. And I guess I should mention, because, of course, I've known and lunched with Mark for 16 years.
Yeah, and I'm, of course, godfather to your children and your godfather to my children. That's there is like a great promiscuity of God parenting in Washington.
Okay, that was definitely something you won't hear elsewhere. Because we're the only ones who have Bob. Support him. Support us. Support your station. Here's how.
It really is true. We are the only ones who have Bob and Brooke, by the way. I think she does an awesome job, too. Give us a call, 217-244-9455. Give online at willpledge.org. It is the Monday of our fall radio pledge drive. And my name is Lisa Braltz. I'm the director of marketing here at WILL in Illinois Public Media. I'm joined in the studio with by John Steinbacher, who is our director of membership and also the dean of the College of Media, Dean Jan Slater. Welcome, Dean.
Great. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you, at least for a few more minutes. So we are here to ask for your support. Those of you listening out there who rely on this program, who love listening to it, maybe you missed it yesterday and you're listening today. We do offer it at two different times on our AM schedule. We're here to ask for your support. And whether it's, and even if you are already a member, maybe you want to shift your gift to a sustainer gift, or maybe you're a new member, you're new to town, you just got here and you found us, your NPR affiliate, but you're not really sure how to get involved and how to give your support. We are looking for people to join us as sustainers, and those are folks who set up an ongoing gift that goes until you tell us to stop. It's you give once a month. You can start at the $5 per month level. That's a really good baseline level. You can give $6 a month, $10 a month, $30 a month, whatever works for you, whatever is best for you. You know, how do you value this service? How do you value shows like On the Media? We would love to hear from you, especially if you want to set up as a sustainer, because we are able to rely on that income. You know, about 40% of our funding comes from, yes, listeners like you. So we would love to hear from you in support of Great Public Media. 217-244-9455. And again, that online option is at willpledge.org. And Dean Slater, off mic, we were talking about some of the changes in media and that have come down the pipeline, not in the last 20 years, but just in the last few years since you became the dean. Do you want to talk a little bit about the conversation we were having about the changes?
Well, I think everybody knows the changes in the fact that social media has become such a large entity. And as such a large entity, it's not just social. It really is about a lot of news and information. So one of the key things now is, you know, we're not just teaching students how to write for print. We're mostly teaching them how to write for shareable content. That changes the way they write headlines. That changes the way they develop a story. That changes the way they lead people into stories, how they use video around the stories, even if it's on the web. So it's a really changing world. I tell freshmen as they come in every fall, you know, it's changed pretty much since the time you walked in the door.
Exactly.
And the jobs that are there right now will not be the jobs that will be there 4 years from now when you graduate, which makes such our partnership and having WILL in the college so important is that students get firsthand knowledge from the moment they walk in the door. They can come over to WILL and intern. We have a lot of people from WILL come over and speak to our classes. And it's not just the news part. We send interns over to marketing. We do a lot of research. So it's really been a great partnership. And I think more than ever before, one of the things I love about fall is not just getting brand new freshmen into the campus or to the college, but there's a brand new set of faculty. And there's all these events, and I so often hear people saying, oh, you're the college where WILL is. I've become a big fan. That's the first thing I did is find out where the public radio station was. And so we like people to find us. We're supported by the audience, and we listen to the audience because we want to be in their world.
And it's very important that we hear from you in support of this partnership, 217-244-9455, or give online at willpledge.org. Thanks.
WILL programming is made possible by the Center for Advanced Study, whose initiative on immigration presents How Immigrants Became Americans, The Case of the Poles by Jim Barrett, on Monday, October 20th at noon at the Center for Advanced Study, 912 West Illinois Street, Urbana.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Since the On the Media listener is a discerning media consumer, we know you know what it takes to get this kind of journalism on the air. It's not easy, and it's not cheap. So before the show is over, we hope you go to the internet to make a secure donation and show us you care. If you don't have access to the internet, but that's ridiculous. Everyone has access to the internet, don't they?
Actually, in a recent survey, Pew found that 15% of American adults don't use the internet at all. Some because of poverty or geography or age, but some just never logged on. OTM producer Alex Goldman and PJ Vogt, a.k.a. TLDR, went on a quest to find someone who never made it online. Or, as they put it, a unicorn. Here's who they found.
Hi, my name is Mike Halkias. I own a restaurant in Brooklyn, New York. Little diner.
He was a really nice 50-something guy. He moved here from Montreal. He loves Led Zeppelin. He has a mural of the band painted on the back of his diner. And he just owns a business where he never had to use a computer.
Everything is cash for me. I have a cash business. Cash goes into the register. I pay cash everything.
Also, it doesn't hurt that he's about the nicest person in the world. People seem to really want to do him favors anytime he needs to use the internet.
If I needed internet, I would always find a friend that ask him favors, and they do me anything I want. Find me a Raider jersey, find me a Montreal Canadiens jersey, find me a ticket, even a date. Anything. Anything I want. People do it for me.
Also, there's this.
And in return, I do them other favors, like give them food. When I need something faxed, I go across the street to the fax place, and of course, I give them a sandwich, they fax my stuff, everything's great.
So you found your unicorn. Does he know about the things that he could be able to do and isn't doing?
He was really embarrassed that he doesn't use it.
My 6-year-old nephew, he knows more about the computer than I. He knows how to get in. He knows how to play his music. He knows how to play his cartoons. He knows how to play his games. I have no idea how to do that. I feel stupid. That's what it is. And I don't want to feel stupid anymore.
So did you help him?
Well, I asked him to come down to the station and sit down in front of a computer with me so I could just sort of see what he was interested in and see if I could direct him toward all the wonderful things on the internet that he would like.
You're a salesperson for the idea of going online.
Yeah, I wanted to provide sort of an interactive infomercial for interactivity.
So what do you, I'm trying to think where I'd even, what do you show him?
Well, the first thing I tried showing him, since he's such a huge Zet fan, was Pandora.
It's like a program that allows you to pick an artist you like, and it'll try and find artists based on the one that you like. So you could conceivably just do this forever. Yeah. It's like listening to the radio, kind of, except you get to tell it that you don't want to hear certain kinds of songs. Yeah. So it's pretty great.
He sounds like he's being really polite, but he doesn't sound interested.
Well, you know, I mean, he's a big enough Zep fan that he painted a mural of them on the back of his diner. So I think that if he wants to listen to music, he'll probably listen to the Led Zeppelin discography, which I'm sure he already has in some kind of hard copy format. I don't think he needs Pandora to be recommending to him CCR or The Doors.
He's heard of those bands.
I'm pretty sure he's familiar with them. This sort of breakthrough moment wasn't from me at all. My colleague Chris Neary was in the studio recording with us, and they're both sort of diehard sports fans.
I was just thinking, how did you end up as a Raiders fan coming from Montreal?
Yeah. In Montreal in the early 70s, they showed the three winning teams in the NFL. The Raiders, the Cowboys, and the Steelers. Well, I had to be a man, so I chose the Raiders.
If you could see a play, like, is there someone you would want to see old video of?
1983, the Super Bowl. The Raiders crushed the Redskins, and I made a ton of money in college. I mean, a ton.
Okay, so let's see if we can't find some highlights from it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. This brings back so many memories. I could stay home and watch this all day, you know that? Oh, boy. Wow. Oh, he's gone. Oh, my God. Wow. He's gone. I remember, like, I'm watching this last night. So at this point, you guys are still, he's like sitting there watching you guys use the computer.
Yeah, I decided to offer him the driver's seat because he is starting to take sort of plaintive steps into internet literacy. And I wanted to give him an opportunity to sort of show me what he can do.
You just move this over. Just, you move the whole mouse.
The whole mouse moves. Okay, cool. And now I can click and pull down.
Yeah.
Click, and then I scroll down, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like he's having kind of a hard time.
He is. In fact, he was actually holding the mouse at this point with both hands. And I think that he was used to having a trackball and didn't understand that you actually had to move the whole object to get the cursor to move. But the surprising thing was that he didn't really know how to search Google.
If you go ahead and take this and move it up to right here.
Okay.
And you can search any word you want. So you can type in plane tickets, Montreal.
Wow.
And then you press enter. And it'll show you.
I'm so amazed, I can't tell you right now.
So, if you wanted to search for literally anything, how about John Bonham?
Mm-hmm.
This is the Wikipedia entry. Do you know what Wikipedia is?
Mm-mm.
So, Wikipedia is like the Encyclopedia Britannica, but it's on the internet.
Things that you take for granted are so eye-opening for me right now, you know?
I think in the end, he sees the internet the same way I do, as sort of like an engine for discovery. And I guess I'm a little jealous of him because I have it at my disposal whenever I want. And in a way, I've discovered a lot of the things that were amazing to me. Mm. He's going to get to see all of that stuff for the first time. So I guess I'm jealous of that lack of experience.
You know, I'm excited to find whatever I'm looking for about myself. And, you know, sometimes when you're looking for one thing, you find another. So I'm really excited. I'm going to look for music that I think I've heard it all, but there's always something that I've missed. Right now, there's going to be no missing. I'll be on the computer all night if I have to be.
Now and again, as a public radio listener, you get to experience the sense of wonder and discovery that Mike Halkus did when he first went online. But you can have it not just once, but whenever you tune into this station. It happens because you care about it and you support it. It's easy. Here's how.
And the number to call, 217-244-9455. or you can give online at willpledge.org. My name is Lisa Brault. I am the Director of Marketing here at Illinois Public Media and WILL, and I'm here with John Steinbacher. He's our Director of Membership, keeping tabs on how we're doing here on this first Monday of our pledge drive. And I'm also joined in the studio by Dean Jan Slater. She's the Dean of the College of Media, and WILL lives under the College of Media. We're a unit of the College of Media, which I don't know that a lot of people realize, but it's true. It's where we live, and we're really lucky to have her visiting us today. We're also really lucky to be hearing from so many listeners during this hour, and there's still time to pledge in support of great public media for On the Media. That's the show that we just finished up. 217-244-9455 is that number to call. You can also give online at willpledge.org. And thanks go out to everybody who contributed during this hour, including Brian and Barbara from Champaign. Thank you so much for your gift. Coming up next, we have one of the most popular programs probably on public radio, and that is Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And Dean Slater, I understand that you are also a fan of Terry Gross and her show.
I'm a huge fan of Terry Gross and her show, and I can listen to it on the radio, and I can go back and listen to it online. She is truly one of the best interviewers in journalism today, and she really is a journalist, and she is so thorough and researches so well, and she has such interesting guests. And she'll start something, and I'll think, oh, I really don't want to listen to this, and then I get caught up, and then at the end of it, I've listened to something that I just never thought I would think, and then I feel like an expert. I can say, mm-hmm. I heard this today on the radio, and I feel like an expert, and she's just really, really wonderful.
That's interesting that you would say that, because a lot of, ironically, considering my interest in music, I actually have never really been a big fan of, like, I always think, like, oh, I don't want to hear this interview with this guy in this band or this guy who wrote a book about this band. But then I always get sucked in, and it's really amazing. Usually I go to Fresh Air. I really love her interviews, her hard news interviews. She has one of the guys from The New Yorker on. Mm-hmm. All the time. I can't remember his name right now, but he's got a great radio voice. Why can I not remember his name? Anyway, I always really look forward to that stuff, but then I find myself every time just staying with the
David
show.
David Brian Cooley.
Well, yeah, he does.
He does great stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
But she had a thing not too long ago on Linda Ronstadt, and I've never been a big fan of Linda mm-hmm. Ronstadt, and I thought, oh.